Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show hosted by Connected Women of Influence. I'm Michelle Berquist. I'm your host today, which I always love saying that. With me today, our very own leading lady is Heather Finlay, who is the CEO of the YWCA of San Diego. So good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
I'm great. I've had a lot of coffee. How about you on a Monday morning?
I'm getting there.
It's like we can infuse it or whatever. That's my standing joke every week. So our listeners are sick of that. I'll change it next week. Hey, I'm excited to have you on here today because I know you've, first of all, I want to like add a full disclosure, say that it's like I'm very excited to be a very proud board member of the YWCA of San Diego, very new board member. But, you know, can you kind of describe for me, I mean, what is the YWCA? Because I have so much to talk to you about this morning about your organization, the events you do. But I have to say it's been interesting because I don't think people really know what is the YWCA and what does the YWCA stand for?
Well, there is one of our biggest challenges. So first let me say we're very happy to have you on the board, very excited. So this is a new chapter for us. We've got Michelle, and working with Connected Women of Influence has been so wonderful to the YWCA. So we appreciate that immensely. As with any nonprofit, you know, we don't get anything done without the help from the community, without the help from volunteers, without the financial support of donors. So it is something that we cherish and we are so grateful for when members of the community get involved with us. And as you mentioned, we do have the challenge of letting the community know or getting the community to know exactly what it is that the YWCA does. Mm-hmm. Many people know the name, but they don't know exactly what we do, and they confuse us with the YMCA.
I hear that all the time.
Right.
I hear all the time. People, the YMCA. I'm like, no, YWCA.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, which YMCA are you with? It's like, you know, I'm with the YWCA, and there's only one in San Diego County. So it is challenging because, obviously, the YMCA and the YWCA have very similar names. The YWCA was started by some wives of some of the board members of the YMCA in the mid-1800s in England. Both of us came over to the United States at the same time. We have similar attributes in trying to help the community. So it has been challenging for people to really understand the distinction. The distinction is the YWCA was started by these wives of the YMCA board members to really promote women and girls and to really deal with issues that were affecting women and girls. So the YWCA is instrumental or was instrumental and getting women the right to vote. The woman who started the YWCA in San Diego, she was a OBGYN. She was the first female OBGYN in San Diego. She was only president for 1 year at the YWCA because she went with Susan B. Anthony to help get the right for women to vote in San Diego and then ultimately in California.
Wow.
Dr. Charlotte Baker. So there is a long history of the YWCA with helping on women's issues, equal pay for women, as I mentioned, the right for women to vote, and just really trying to establish that equality for women. In addition,
I'm shocked as a board member that I didn't know this. So thank you for educating me today as a board member.
Well, there is a long history with the YWCA, and it takes a little while to get to know. Absolutely.
Yeah. You do such good in the community, but anyway, keep telling us about what the YWCA is and what it stands for, because I want all of our listeners to know.
Right. So the other side of what the YWCA does is We're a social service organization. We try to help the community. And many people don't know this either, but the YWCA is worldwide. And each local YWCA in whatever town or city they're in has the ability to establish whatever that community needs to empower women and eliminate racism. So, mm-hmm. for instance, in San Diego, we help women and children escaping domestic violence. We help women who are homeless, and we help families who are homeless. And what we do is offer very comprehensive programs to help them with the trauma that they've experienced and to help them develop career paths. We help them with their legal needs so that they can build new lives for themselves and they can support themselves and their children. So these are, most of our programs are 2 years in length. Our Cortez Hill Family Center program for homeless families is 45 days. And it's, I got involved with the organization because I was so in awe of the work that the staff does at the YWCA and how beneficial these all-encompassing and comprehensive programs are to really help people see the world in a different way, really build their self-esteem and go out there and support themselves.
And let me ask you a question, Heather, because it's like that's a huge jump because you came from the for-profit world and you're already one step ahead of me because my next question was going to be, it's like, so why did you get on board with the YWCA? But, you know, I mean, what made you leave for-profit, successful business, you know, owners, I understand it from your background and, you know, in the real estate industry. I mean, what made, do please share about your background and what made you jump, you know, to go over to a nonprofit organization from being in a for-profit, you know, business?
Well, I wish I could tell you it was a conscious decision, but it wasn't. I was in the for-profit world. I was a real estate developer. I used to build luxury apartments. I worked for a company called JPI, opened an office here in San Diego for them and an office in San Francisco, and I also opened an office in Toronto. So I was traveling to all of these places.
Wow.
And my husband sat me down one day, and this was actually in 2002, and the apartment market was starting to soften a little bit. And my husband talked me into taking a few years off. He said, "You need to take some time off and just chill for a little while." And it took him 2 years to convince me to do this, and I finally did take some time off. And we decided to travel for a couple of years.
Now, well, do you guys have children? Do you have children,
no.
Or is it you and him? Okay, got
no,
it.
We do not. So we traveled for a little while and. Travel is wonderful. It's one of my favorite things to do. I love to meet people, and I love to experience different cultures. So that is, you know, the best way to do both of those things is to travel. We met a lot of wonderful people, have some wonderful friends in a lot of different countries now. But mentally, I just wasn't satisfied, and I wasn't giving back. I wasn't making myself useful, it felt like. So I went and volunteered, and one of my coworkers at JPI is involved with the YWCA, and she said, why don't you come to the In the Company of Women luncheon, and this is in the springtime, and learn more about...
That's what got me excited,
exactly.
too. It seems like that's a good place to get people. Okay.
That's right. So come to the luncheon, see what it's all about. Well, I learned that at the time, and this was in 2007, that our second Becky's House was being built, which is a small apartment community, and they needed help. I'm like, oh, I can help you with that. So you start as a volunteer. I helped with that, get that going, and then I was part of the real estate committee, and then that led to being on the board. And then we had a leadership transition in 2009, and we needed somebody to step into the role right away. And I actually stepped into the role on a temporary basis. But that was 3 years ago. I'm still here.
Look at you now. And were you, before you, when you were a developer and you decided to take time off, was it that you were burnt out? Was it that you were just not being fulfilled in your current role? Because that's really a male-dominated industry, real estate development. So what caused you to kind of say, oh, you know, I need to take some time off? What did your husband see?
Yeah, it was more burnout. It was just working so hard and... focusing mostly on work and really not on anything else, and, you know, having my husband want to spend a little bit of time with me. But I was flying to cities, and I would wake up in the morning and not know where I was. I'd have to look outside the window to figure out where I was. You know, it was just working really, really hard and just needing to learn a little balance, essentially. So I took some time off to try to learn balance. I didn't learn very much, quite frankly.
I was going to say, you went from one frying pan to the other, didn't
exactly.
you? Because I'm sure your job is just 8 to 5 Monday through Friday as running a nonprofit, right?
Yeah,
it's like,
no,
you know,
no.
Baker's hours.
But
well, and
go ahead. People often will ask me, well, how did you go from development to, you know, working for the YWCA and helping women and children? And when you think about it, it wasn't really that big of a leap. When I was in development, I wasn't really doing this maybe consciously, but I was really trying to help women succeed in development. There weren't that many of us. In fact, I'm
okay.
still the only female partner that JPI has ever had. It was challenging. There was nobody else like me, and I really was trying to bring women forward in that business. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it really wasn't that big of a stretch to come to the YWCA and want to help women succeed and want to help them, you know, develop career paths where they can be successful and go out and really reach their goals.
And I got to ask, I mean, in making that leap, so, okay, so now you've been on board as the CEO. I mean, we're going to talk more about the YWCA, but what in making that leap, what has been maybe something that was just such an eye-opener to you that maybe you didn't see when you first came on board? Because, I mean, talk about, you know, hitting it at the right time with what was coming down the pike with the economy. Who would have seen that? That's been a huge impact to you guys, right? So what?
Absolutely. There are actually many things that weren't quite exactly how I thought they would be. But first and foremost, I took the CEO role in March of 2009. The economy crashed in October of 2008. So I knew we were in the most challenging economy, certainly of my life. And coming from the real estate world, you definitely come from an industry where you peak in valley. About every 10
right.
years, you peak in valley. So this was definitely different, and I knew this was worse, and I knew it was going to be challenging. But quite frankly, I really underestimated how challenging it would be and just how far-reaching the challenge would be for fundraising for our organization. We're well diversified from different funding sources, but when
right.
everything goes down at the same time and when everybody's impacted at the same time, it's a very, very big challenge to try to find additional funding sources to keep your organization going.
And how did that hit you? I mean, was it like all of a sudden people just started pulling back, or was it just slowly and over the year with the meltdown that it's like people, you just felt that the funding was less and less and less because people weren't committing? Or I mean, what was that like? I'm only trying to say that because it's like I do hear from nonprofits and business, you know, for-profit owners that just say, man, it was just like this slow-motion evolution that people just stopped spending and stopped spending. So what was that like for you to kind of, were you going back to donors and asking and they were saying, oh, no, we're not doing it? Or what was the experience like to go through that?
Well, for us, it was almost overnight. So immediately we were thankful not to lose donors, but donors were not able to give as much as they have been. So there was a significant drop there. Corporations pulled back on their philanthropic giving. They now had holes in their budgets that they didn't have before. Foundations, because of the impact on the financial markets and investments, foundations were pulling back because they didn't have the same amount of wealth in their accounts that they had before. And the government, I'll just tell you a quick story. In 2009, the California state government under Governor Schwarzenegger eliminated one of our large grants for our Becky's House domestic violence program overnight. So what, you know, Tuesday we had it, Wednesday we didn't. And
so you had the commitment, and then it's like it got the plug got pulled. I mean, without any notice.
And that's the challenge with government funding is they just pull the plug overnight. And you know, these can oftentimes be large grants, hundreds of thousands of dollars. So you have, you know, you have your significant salaries there, you have your counselors there. You know, the most important thing we have is our people. They're the ones who are offering the services, career counseling, counseling from a therapeutic perspective, legal assistance, all of these things. This is all service-oriented, so our people are our most important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you are dealing with, all of a sudden, you don't have the funding that you used to have. And where are you going to make that up in this kind of economy? And we're not the only ones impacted this
way. No, is it across the board? But it's
everybody,
like, what kind of action,
exactly.
What action do you take with that? I mean, all of a sudden, if you had money coming in yesterday and then you get notice you don't, I mean, did you start, what were some of the actions? Did you start laying off people? Is that what you had to do immediately? Or did you go to the mattresses? Or what did you do?
Well, right.
Not
so
to make
we
light
were,
of it, but.
Yeah, we were lucky we had a reserve, which we've effectively used, you know, through this economic down cycle. We did have to lay some people off. And
mm-hmm.
we also did a big campaign politically with elected officials to try to get that money back. And we were successful in doing that, but that took time. You know, it took probably a year and a half to get the full amount of that grant back. And there's no guarantee that it's going to stay back, if
right,
you will.
Right, right.
I mean, it is possible that something will be cut again. We are faced with this every day. Every day, the government is working with its budget and deciding what it's going to cut.
And how have you shifted, you know, how you fundraise now? I mean, if that is kind of like, you know, the norm, because I've heard that over and over, going to different events over the years since, you know, the great recession of 2008, is what do you do? I mean, how did you shift your gears to go from, because, you know, you guys do, we're going to talk about your event here in a second, but what kind of, you know, change in action did you guys go about to change how you're raising funds? Or did
You continue with the things that you have been doing, because those are that's the crux of the revenue coming in, but you definitely need to make additions. So one of the benefits we had is we had a piece of property that we were able to sell that we just recently sold. So that helped us to a point. But what we're working on now is we're always working to build new relationships. We're always working to create community awareness. Obviously, the more people that know about us and the work that we do, the more opportunity we have for them to volunteer for us and provide financial support to the organization. But we also know that we have to think differently. We have to think in a way that is somewhat commensurate with a for-profit organization. And I just want to make clear that, you know, nonprofits really do look at their financials. They really do some things that are commensurate with a nonprofit, but you can't do everything like you can in a nonprofit world because you're just working with limited resources.
Right.
But what we're looking at now is the new term has been called social enterprise. So if you look at the nonprofits that are doing fairly well through this economic downturn, you know, they have a product or service that they actually are able to sell, you know, to consumers. And we want to develop that kind of business strategy so that we have a different type of revenue stream coming into the organization that hopefully once we get something up and running will be more consistent, but again, another diversified source of revenue. And that's what we're looking at now is how can we diversify into different sources of revenue.
And I know this is a work in progress from you, one, because I'm very excited about the social enterprise, quote-unquote, committee,
right,
to find those alternative revenue sources for you. But is that, I mean, did you I mean, is this something that you kind of read about with other nonprofits? Is that what that's what they need to do to be sustainable? I mean, how do you kind of learn about new ways? Because you're not from the nonprofit world. So what do you, you know, do you have mentors? Is it that there's an association for nonprofit leaders? I know we've had this conversation, but, you know, most of us will learn from somebody else. So where are you learning of what to do as a nonprofit leader?
Well, it's definitely having discussions with people in the nonprofit industry. I spent, you know, definitely the first year talking to anybody and everybody I could in the nonprofit world and how do you do this and how do you do that, developing best practices, you know, what works, what have you done that hasn't worked. But I will say that, you know, each nonprofit has its own nuances and, you know, different things work for different organizations. Definitely, there's a difference in the services that you're providing. So certain things are going to work for certain organizations. As far as the social enterprise, I mean, that was really, you know, me looking at other organizations that have something that they provide to the community. For instance, the YMCA provides fitness facilities that families pay for. They pay for that service. You know, the Boys and Girls Club has a swim team where the kids, the families of the children pay to be in on that swim team and to go use their fitness facilities. So they are actually earning revenue in a different way. And it is a lot of reading. It is a lot about talking to different individuals and certainly talking to people that have been in the nonprofit world but also been in the for-profit world for quite a while, because it's learning about different ideas, different concepts, but then you've got to be able to look at those and say, huh, you know, how can I maybe mold these two concepts together and make something work for my organization, for the services that I provide?
Well, and if you don't mind sharing, I mean, where have your best ideas come from? Has it been from for-profit people? Can you put a thumbprint on where you feel it's like, man, this is where I just get some of my best resources or information or ideas?
You know, for me, it is every single person I've talked to, I've gotten something from them. It may not be a complete idea or a complete concept. I mean, it's not something that I go, oh, I'm going to take that and move it over here. But I can get something from them. There's something that they tell me that I think, huh, maybe we could do this in a different way. And certainly, you know, for instance, meeting with women of Connected Women of Influence, learning what it is that they're looking for, what they need as business owners, is very helpful when you're trying to develop a strategy for your social enterprise. Because what you have
to have, you're being so kind.
seriously, what you have to have is you have to know what there is a need for. You want to provide something that not a lot of people are already providing. And especially if you're a nonprofit trying to start a social enterprise business, you know, you need to be able to do it with very little outlay of cash, you know, going in. So it's important to find the right idea, but it's also important to kind of survey your market and make sure you can find a niche that you can fill.
And that's where I got to give you a huge compliment. I mean, it's like, you know, we've met, now we're kind of getting to know each other a little bit longer for the support that CWI is doing and, you know, involvement on the board. And it's like, you know, I'm like, gosh, I mean, the stuff you do, it's like some of the women I've talked to, it's like my heart just, you know, crumbles. It's like I just go, my gosh, you know, I mean, walk in someone else's shoes, which we're going to talk about your event, I promise.
Yeah.
And but in kind of like kudos to you, it's like I do think one of the things I like is that, you know, you're so many nonprofits I've experienced in the past, it's like they have absolutely the emotional appeal, they're trying to do good, but I see you blending the business side of it with the emotional nonprofit side. And I think that is really a good combination. I mean, I'm, you know, not patting you on the back by any means, but I just know some of the nonprofits I've seen, and would you agree that I think where they miss the mark is that they just focus in on, because we're doing such good, you know, give us money. And it's more than that. It's looking at this almost as a business, as well as saying, here's the good that we do. Would you agree with that?
Well, I would actually say my experience, I understand what you're saying, absolutely. My experience with the people I've met in the nonprofit world here in San Diego, I'm pretty impressed with their business savvy. And you're right. There are a number of nonprofits that start as social service, and they certainly have a great need. They certainly do wonderful work. But some may not have quite as much financial skill or business skill as somebody who has worked in business and has come out of that arena. But I do want to point out that the one of the things, you asked me what I've learned, this is the other thing I've learned. One of them is the people that work in the nonprofit industry, it's amazing what they make happen with so very little. It is amazing to me that so many nonprofits exist and make things happen, because the resources are so few. It's just quite phenomenal what happens in a nonprofit organization with what they have. For instance,
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, so I can help a woman who is a victim of domestic violence overcome her trauma with counseling. I can help her develop a career. I can help her with her legal needs, her restraining order, her divorce. We can help break the cycle with the children. We can help with programs to help the kids see paths and avenues to college. I can do that for a whole year for less than $4,000. So
Wow. It's
quite amazing, really, what happens and what gets accomplished. But to your point, yes, if you have somebody who has a business background or some business savvy, definitely a benefit.
Well, and I got to say, I had no idea, I knew of the things you did until I actually sat down and had a few meetings with a few of the YWCA clients as women to understand what they were trying to do and trying to find employment. Now I had a name and a face, and it's like, and then I've been to a couple of the events, and, again, I know you've gotten such amazing feedback, but the kind of like client that was up on stage and the story that was told at the last Twin event that showed how all these different parties helped out with this one individual to get her back on her feet, get her, out of a very horrible situation with domestic violence, and here's all the people that just had a small piece in helping that. It's like you just had goosebumps on your arms, and I can't recall that there was a dry eye in the house at that event. I mean, how do you go about, and this is kind of my last question before we talk about the event, is how do you pull at those heartstrings for that? Because people, that just, you can't find that on a website. It's like videos are popular now. Is that where you're going to kind of show those things more visually?
Yes. We've done a few videos. As you mentioned, we have our events where we have speakers talk about it. But it is a challenge. It is a challenge to educate the population on domestic violence and why it happens. The question we get all the time is, why doesn't she just walk out the door and leave? Well,
yeah.
Domestic violence is about manipulation. It's PTSD. It is total brainwashing. It is, this person loves you and supports you and cares about you and oftentimes is the father of your children. And he slowly starts to manipulate your thought processes by isolating you and telling you that you really can't do things, you can't do these things well. And anybody is susceptible to this. And it happens in all avenues, regardless of your wealth, regardless of your culture. And it is a very manipulative process. And you add financial constraints in there, and then you add a poor economy, and then you add threats to yourself and to your children. It's a very challenging environment to leave. So it's courageous that these women leave. I'm glad that they do. It's about, we have a hotline. We do safety planning. It's about giving them the information that they need and helping them to understand that there are programs out there. But it's also helping the community understand that this is a traumatic event, and it is something that is complicated, and it is something that it really, really helps to get counseling for and support mechanisms and letting people know that they definitely are cared for, they're definitely worthwhile.
And let me ask you this, Heather, just, you know, for the point of if people want to reach you or contact you, do you mind sharing the website, and is there a phone number you want to give out if anybody has questions, or maybe they know somebody, you know, that's listening that is in a, you know, domestic violence situation, or
right.
Where do people contact you if they want to get a hold of you?
Okay, so if you need help or you know someone who is in an abusive relationship and you want to get more information, please call our YWCA Becky's House hotline, which is 619-234-3164. And if you want more information, go to our website, which is ywcasandiego.org.
Awesome, awesome. And I want to end on a high note because we've got just a couple of minutes left here. But, you know, the title of our interview today was Are You Man Enough? And it's like I love the tie-in because you're having an incredible event scheduled for October 4th, which is called Walk a Mile in Her Shoes. Can you kind of tell a little bit about that? Of what I have a visual of men in high heels, but other than that, it's like tell me a little bit about the event if you don't mind and for our listeners.
Yeah, this is a fabulous idea for an event. It's not mine, but I definitely give kudos to the gentleman who came up with this.
Even better.
This is an event. It brings awareness to domestic violence in a very lighthearted way. So we ask men to wear women's high heels and walk for a mile in downtown San Diego. And it really is working. It is getting men to think about women and what they do for us and what it must be like to be in a domestic violence situation. And I will say that men are also victims of domestic violence, but because the YWCA helps women and children, I tend to speak in that direction. We want to stop violence against women. We want to stop violence against everyone, but we focus on women. And the men really pay attention to this. The event is growing. It is, as I said, a very lighthearted way to get the community involved. We're not going to end violence against women until we get men involved.
Right.
And we have a fun party. This year it's at Dick's Last Resort. I'm very excited about that. So you walk for a mile. It takes 30 minutes to 45 minutes, and then you get to go to Dick's and have refreshments and we have some great prizes, too, this year that you can be entered into a drawing for if you raise certain levels of pledges for your walk. This is a fundraising event for us. But we have a fabulous beach house in Mission Beach for 4 nights. We have an iPad. We have a great golf foursome at the Loma Santa Fe Country Club.
Oh, my.
SeaWorld tickets. So if you raise a certain level of funding, you'll be entered into a drawing to win those prizes.
And people don't, I mean, again, they can come attend and watch. They don't have to just walk. I mean, I know you guys are looking for groups of dudes that are worthy for this, like maybe in companies within corporate America that would be teams of people that might walk together. Is that kind of the focus, too, to bring in more teams for the event?
Absolutely. Anybody can walk. Women, children walk. Everybody walks. You don't have to wear the heels. I have men say, well, I have bad knees. We don't want you hurting your knees or hurting your ankles. But if you can do it, it's great. It's a lot of fun. It's a pretty big accomplishment, too. I think the men feel very good about themselves for doing this, for walking a full mile. But, yes, one of the wonderful attributes of this event is that it can be a community event, so to speak, for companies, corporations. It's a great way to get employees together and do something fun and then give back to the community. So we do have companies that will have teams of employees participate. Sometimes they get T-shirts made that can announce, you know, that announces their company. So it's also, you know, we get a lot of attention at this event from the television stations and different press people. So it's a great opportunity to promote your company as well. We put your name on the sign. We've got some fabulous sponsors, Sequan, Benefit Pro, General Dynamics, NASCO, Hilton San Diego, Power Plus, and the Zenith have been great for us this year. And, of course, we really appreciate Dick's Last Resort for being our partner on the party.
Sure. And so you guys are always looking for more sponsors, though. The sponsor package is on the website. Is that correct?
It is. It's on the website. You can get more information on the website at ywcasandiego.org. You can go directly there and register. Registration as of tomorrow, it's $35 today, goes up to $45 tomorrow. Then we ask you to get pledges for your walk. You still have an opportunity to sponsor, and all that information is on the website. Oh,
awesome.
And we also provide the shoes if you don't have your own heels.
Oh, you do provide, or you guys provide them?
We will provide shoes if you don't have your own shoes. I will tell you guys that walk in this event more than once, get their own.
I hope you guys have a shoe company as a sponsor. Do you? I didn't see that on the list. Is there a shoe company?
You know what? We haven't been able to get a shoe company to sponsor us.
Oh, my gosh. I know somebody I should put you in front of. It's like, seriously. I mean, that is hysterical that you can supply them. But I know. Can you see Men in Pradas, right? It's like, I'm not even a shoe, you know, knowledge-esque person. But just I'm looking at the promotion on the event and seeing high heels with men in jeans. So pretty funny.
They care about the color and they care about the style. It's funny.
Well, I think that's a fun way to go. And it's like, you know, one final thought on, you know, just as far as our listeners go, I mean, what's one thing that you would like anybody listening today just to be able to do to support the YWCA? Put it out there, and it's like, you know, we're on our last 60 seconds here. So what would you like our listeners to do for you?
Well, of course, we are always in need of volunteers to help us with different projects. We, as I mentioned, we're doing our social enterprise committee, trying to come up with what that business option will be. So we're always in need of volunteers to help us with a lot of different things. But really, we need donations. If you can participate in the Walk a Mile in Our Shoes event, that would help us tremendously. It's also a lot of fun. If you can donate directly, please go to our website at ywcasandiego.org and make a donation, because it's phenomenal to – I get to see this. I get to see the people. I have the women come into my office and say, thank you for saving my life. I want the community out there to know that you are saving lives. You are changing the trajectory of so many children and giving so many people opportunities to go out there and live great lives. And I wish I could – bottle this and package it and give it to you so that you could feel it. But there's nothing better. So thank you.
I think you can bottle it, but we want to spread it around. So I think you've got a worthy goal, and whatever we can do to be able to help support that. So Heather, thank you. I want to thank all of our listeners today for just kind of spending time with us. Our next Women Leading the Way radio show will be next Monday morning, 9 a.m., where I will be interviewing Julia Fagan with Konecki Insurance, and we'll be talking about, it's like, are you protected? Do you have enough coverage? I mean, insurance is such a fun topic, you know what I'm saying? But at any rate, I'm sure we'll put a spin on it and have a lot of fun. So Heather, thanks again to all of our listeners. We'll see you back again next Monday morning. So everyone, have a fabulous week, and we'll talk to you again.
Thank you, Michelle.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.